Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. If you desire to speak to the host, please press 1 at any time, and the host will be notified that there is a caller in queue. Otherwise, please hold and you will be able to listen to the show.
Evil hands have intervened, controlling from the shadows, think they can't be seen. But we have eyes, in the dark, to cast a light upon the madness we embark. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand of the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Upon their face, sincerity, while underneath a self-agenda does proceed. But falsity perfumes the air. The sin screams louder than the finest ever there. They'll fill your place with GMOs, and soon your lineage will never cease to grow. Inject your blood with toxic waste. The world is all the fairs if you'll just die in haste. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. For we must be the masters of our destiny. For we must be the masters of our destiny.
Welcome. You're listening to Vaccines in Your Rights in the U.S. with vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, speaking to you from the Vaccine Rights Studios here in beautiful Asheville, North Carolina. We are here every Wednesday afternoon, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 Central, 4 Mountain, and 3 p.m. Pacific Time. And we've got a lot to talk about today, as always. There's always more to discuss on the vaccine issue than there is time to say it. But we'll see how much we can get to today. We may, I'm not sure about this, actually, we may have a guest or two joining us. But this is also a call-in show. You can call in just to listen if you want to listen by phone. But you can also call in to ask a question about your rights with vaccines or offer a comment. That call-in number is area code 347-324-3704. That's area code 347-324-3704. 3704. Don't be shy. Pick up that phone. Call in with your question or comment. I'm glad to help you with it if I can, or to have your contribution. And let's see what else. This is a simulcast show. We are going out live to Freedomizer Radio and Homeopathy World Community Radio. So we welcome listeners from both of those audiences and anyone else who cares to listen in to the live show or an archive at any time. I'm just going to go through part of the day today, some of the things that people have emailed me about, questions and concerns. For example, here's one from a chiropractor in California I got recently who said a mother had called him today and said she tried to get a religious exemption under the new California exemption law. And she told a nurse that she doesn't visit quote unquote authorized healthcare providers. And the nurse asked her to name her religion. And the woman said she was a Christian. And the nurse told her that being Christian does not allow her to get the exemption. Well, sorry, folks, that's not how it works. And sadly, I hear stories all the time. Just I got off the phone not more than 20 minutes ago with somebody in another state talking about an aggressive school nurse. Former school nurses had been no problem, but the current school nurse now is being more aggressive about vaccines and exemptions. These folks, you know, their hearts are in the right places. I will give them the benefit of the doubt. But they buy into and believe all the stuff they're told. They don't understand. They don't recognize that we live in a world full of deceit and full of people, corporations, and people who run them who don't have any problem at all with lying in order to enhance their bottom line or whatever other agendas they may be pursuing. You know, one of my first answers to anyone who looks cross-eyed at you when you suggest that maybe you can't always trust everything that comes out of a industry or representative official or public health official or other politicians' mouths, can't necessarily believe everything they say. Hey, there were no weapons of mass destruction. That we now know, this is documented on the internet. And when I say on the internet, I don't mean just a bunch of people putting out their personal opinions. You can go look at the videos of the administration officials in our own federal government saying one thing to the country and the world, and then in the next video clip, the exact same person saying exactly the opposite. Oh, I never said that. And there it is. In black and white or living color right there, the official saying it. We have people who lie in the moment to achieve whatever their private, personal, or political agenda is or may be. And maybe you wouldn't do that, and I certainly wouldn't do that, but we need to understand that there's a percentage of the population that does function that way. And there are ultimately, I'm sure, many different styles and degrees and variations and so forth. So these people, and while this happens with people throughout all segments of our society, it happens to be a disproportionately high percentage of these people in positions of power and authority. And so other people who are following orders and don't understand that you can't just believe everything somebody says just because they're the boss or the quote-unquote authority or official in a particular position with government or industry. But we should be able to trust those people. In a perfect world, we would and could. We just happen to have a world that's far from a perfect world. But many people reasonably trust and believe authoritative sources blindly. And some of these people become school nurses who believe that vaccines are safe and effective and necessary and feel like you're putting them and everyone else at risk if you don't get a vaccine, or your children are being horribly abused if they're not vaccinated and putting everyone at risk and so forth. So they're becoming increasingly aggressive because those people have not yet recognized what's really going on. So anyway, this back to the original question. being Christian does not allow her to get the exemption. That's just flat out wrong. And to give a complete explanation about how the law works would take a lot longer than we have for the show here. That's something I do in private consultations. But in quick summary, even when you're talking about state exemptions, where there's a law, state law for state exemptions, or a federal law for federal exemptions, for example, in the military or for immigrants. Whenever a state or federal law tells you that you have some sort of right concerning religion, what governs what does or doesn't qualify is going to be the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, and in particularly part of the First Amendment that refers to the free exercise of religion. And how we know what that phrase means, because that's a very general, in fact, that's a downright vague phrase, free exercise of religion. All you really get from that is that you're talking about people exercising religion and you're talking about religion, you know, and I mean, that's really vague. The way we know what that really means with respect to any particular situation is through legal precedent, and legal precedent comes from actual past court cases. Now, only a tiny, tiny percentage of all the court cases that go on in the country ever end up generating legal precedent. But those cases that do are points of reference in the law. So we can look at legal precedent to see, well, what kinds of beliefs are protected by law as religious beliefs? Or put another way, what is the legal definition of religion? Or what is the definition of religion for legal purposes? Because for our own personal purposes, we can define religion any way we want to. But when you're talking about exemptions, you're talking about a legal right. And if you want the protection of the law for your beliefs or your religious practices, then you've got to meet the legal definition. And yes, we do have this so-called separation of church and state, something that is inferred from the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. But it's not a bright red line. Government can only stick its nose into your religious beliefs and practices, though, up to a very superficial point. For example, there are Supreme Court cases that say you can exercise your religion with your child or your children without any state interference up to the point where your exercise of your religion is going to cause an imminent risk of harm or actual harm to your child. At that point, the state has authority to step in and say, no, you can't practice your religion in that way. So the state has authority to step in and protect children. The concept is absolutely valid. We want the state to protect children whose parents aren't taking proper care of them. Of course, there's a whole separate question about where do you draw the lines and who gets to draw them and what really is or isn't proper intervention by authorities, and lots of issues on authorities overstepping boundaries. And then on the other side of that same coin, children who fall through the cracks who should be removed and aren't removed and end up being seriously hurt or killed in rare instances. So there are problems, you know, with the implementation, but the basic concept is sound. We, most of us, I feel sure, would like the state to step in to protect children when they genuinely need protection from a parent's actions or failure to act. But up to that point, you pretty much can do whatever you want with your religion with respect to your children. If it's not going to harm them or cause an imminent risk of harm or harm them, you can do what you want. And it doesn't matter for when you're getting back more specifically to vaccine religious exemptions or an exemption covers religious objections. All three of the West Coast states now have state exemption laws that don't use the word religion, but they encompass a right to refuse vaccines for personal religious beliefs. So don't assume just because a law doesn't use the word religion, they can't have a religious exemption. Maybe they're not going to call it a religious exemption, but you can probably still qualify for the exemption based on religious objections. And that's actually and potentially a more powerful or better protected right. Because when you have religious objections, you have constitutional rights that aren't there for philosophical objections. And the U.S. Constitution is a higher legal authority than state law. So that's a good thing to have. So even in states that have philosophical exemptions, I recommend that people refuse on religious grounds. And here's the quick summary to a much longer explanation, a complete explanation. It doesn't matter whether or not you belong to any religious organization at all, whether you have any affiliation whatsoever with any religious organization or any religion. And if you are a member of a particular religion, church, or religious organization, it doesn't matter which one it is. There are many, many Christians all over the U.S. who are exercising proper, valid, legally appropriate, legally valid exemptions. Many people mistakenly think you have to be a Christian Scientist or Amish or something like that, a member of a religion where the religion itself has tenets opposed to all medical care, allopathic care, or all tenets opposed to vaccines. And that's just not how the law works. So it's really important for us to understand how the law works, not only so we can make informed decisions about how to approach exemptions so we don't accidentally approach it in a way that where we lose an exemption or complicate things because we don't understand how the law works. So it's really important for us to take steps so that we understand our rights, but not just so that we know how to proceed with respect to ourselves, but so we also know when other people are overstepping their boundaries. And this just infuriates me when people on the other side of the fence, such as a school nurse who's going to assert something so ignorant as being Christian does not allow you to get the exemption. Being Christian has absolutely nothing to do with it. Nurse, as long as the person objecting follows correct state law procedure, and even then sometimes when a state law or the procedure violates the Constitution, then you don't have to follow it, you may have difficulty convincing somebody else of that. You might have to involve an attorney to get that accomplished. For example, I've had clients where the state law still says you have to be a member of an organized religion. That violates the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. You might have to have an attorney help you in that situation because the officials are going to say, well, this is what the law says. This is what we got to do. Well, you have something from your attorney that explains the law and makes all the proper legal citations, and they realize that they could be sued, and they'll talk to their attorneys, and usually their attorney will say, well, yeah, they're right, you know, our procedure or our law violates the Constitution. So, they do qualify. They can have the exemptions. I've worked with people in situations like that and helped them get the exemption, fortunately. Because usually they'll cooperate and make an exception for that one person rather than risk a formal conflict, a lawsuit, where the court may say the law is unconstitutional and that may cause them to fix the law, which would actually potentially result in more people exercising the exemption. And of course, they don't want to risk that. So they will often cooperate with someone who's got an attorney pointing out that the law is unconstitutional and the person qualifies for the exemption. So there are some potentially difficult situations. But the reason to understand your rights, in addition to making sure that you're approaching the situation in a way that's going to serve your interests and not accidentally shoot yourself in the foot, it's so you also know when people on the other side are overstepping their boundaries. School nurse says being Christian does not allow you to get the exemption. If you don't know that that's legally incorrect, you might, you know, a parent might say, oh, well, I guess I can't have an exemption and go vaccinate their kid when they really didn't want to, when it really was against their religious Christian beliefs. So when you understand how all of this works, you're in a better position to make informed decisions and therefore more intelligent ones about how to approach things and what to do when this situation or that situation comes up. So let me see. Let me move on here. I had somebody emailing me recently asking for my thoughts on a situation where the child is unvaccinated because of religious exemption. A chickenpox outbreak occurs in the school, and the child is sent home. Now, in this case, they said they had a titer test that was negative, which they sent over, and the health department overlooked it. Somebody made a mistake, and the kid ends up back in school for 13 days. Now, let me back up a step on the first part here. It's policy all over the country, as far as I know, that when there's a local outbreak. Now, local outbreak, a few decades ago, you'd had to have 20, 30, or some minimum number of a particular kind of disease before they'd call it an outbreak. But now, outbreak all over the country appears to be defined something like this: anything greater than the norm, and of course the norm is now considered to be no cases. So a single case of chickenpox is now an outbreak. With such power they're giving to individual children now that individual children can now be their very own outbreak all by themselves. Just amazing, this unfettered power they're giving to children. Anyway, a single case of a disease these days is considered an outbreak, as silly as that is for anybody who's old enough to remember what outbreaks used to be or who has otherwise become aware of that information. And policy all over the country is that if you are not vaccinated and there's an outbreak, then all of the unvaccinated kids have to stay home for the incubation period of the disease. This is because if they're exposed, they could be spreading the disease and not knowing it. I guess that's the theory anyway. And the incubation period for chickenpox is officially considered to be 10 to 21 days. And so, of course, they're going to make you stay home for 21 days on the off chance that in this particular instance, it is 21 days and not 10 or 12 or 15. So now this policy is... I have to try so hard to be polite. This policy is total BS. It makes no sense medically and therefore no sense legally. And I'm not stretching for alternative information here. You know, I'm not even going into the level of let's look at what is truthfully really going on with immunology and immunization and the immune system and so forth. Do vaccines even work at all, et cetera? I'm not going into those directions, although there's plenty of information to suggest that the entire concept is scientifically and historically invalid. And I've spoken with experts who have made that point very convincingly. But let's just look at the mainstream information for right now, because this is actually all we need to show how absurd this is. The CDC says on its website, unless they've taken this down recently, that 5 to 15% of vaccinated kids are not immune. In other words, the vaccines don't work. Now, there are studies showing much higher numbers for certain vaccines in certain studies, but let's just take them at their word on these very conservative figures, 5 to 15%. So roughly on average, 10% of kids are not vaccinated. I mean, who are vaccinated are not immune. Vaccines don't work. And the latest information I've seen about immunization rates nationally, on average, 1.8%. So you have 1.8% of the population that is not vaccinated, medical religious exemptions. Of the remaining 98.2%, about 10% of them are not immune from their vaccines. So that's on average five times or more. Let's just round it off. It's around five times as many non-immune vaccinated kids as there are exempt kids. Now, if we assume that exempt kids are not immune, which turns out to be an assumption that medically you can't make with respect to any individual kid, but, and I'll come back to that in a moment, but if we assume that every unvaccinated kid is also not immune, then there are five times as many non-immune vaccinated kids as there are non-immune not vaccinated kids. So when there's an outbreak, you want to make all the vaccinated kids stay home? I mean, excuse me, all the non-vaccinated kids stay home? What about the five times as many not immune vaccinated kids? How come they don't have to stay home? Well, we don't know who they are. You know, we can't test everybody to find out. Well, you sure as heck better, because if the 1.8% of unvaccinated kids are really a potential problem, then the 10% of not immune vaccinated kids are five times the problem. And here's the clincher for all this. According to the CDC, the non-vaccinated kids can get natural immunity and without even developing symptoms. So you don't have to get sick with the chickenpox to be immune from the chickenpox with natural immunity, or any other infectious disease for the child, an infectious disease for that matter. So it doesn't make sense medically. And therefore, if only the kids with religious exemptions have to stay home and none of the non-immune vaccinated kids, then that's discriminatory, because we don't even know if the non-vaccinated kids are not immune. You're assuming they're not immune when the only way you can tell if somebody is immune, whether or not they're vaccinated, the only way you can tell with respect to any individual is to do a titer test. Do they have the antibodies? And if somebody has vaccine-induced antibodies at one point in time, in the future, the same issue comes up, you've got to test them again, because those antibodies, if they are not natural, if they are vaccine-induced, they go away. Vaccine protection is not lifelong. It usually is lifelong protection if you get natural immunity, but it's not when it comes from vaccines. So this is another fact that blows a hole in the whole herd immunity theory, because you have each year you're vaccinating another crop of kids, and with the possible exception, I think, of the flu vaccine, you're not vaccinating every year. When you vaccinate every year with the flu vaccine, you're not vaccinating for the same strain every year. So while some kids are being vaccinated right away, and some of those kids, maybe most of them, are going to have supposedly vaccine-induced immunity, the kids who were vaccinated a year ago, 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, each year more and more of the immunity that was present previously wears off. So you never at any given point in time have 90% of the population immune or 95% immune, which is what herd immunity claims to need. But you don't ever have that. It turns out you can't have that, because not only is everyone who gets a vaccine not immune right up from the get-go, many of the ones who do generate the proper antibody response, and let's just assume that works. That's a disputable assertion, but for purposes of the point, let's give them benefit of the doubt. Let's say everyone who develops antibodies is immune. And let's say, on average, it's 90% or more. A year later, you're not going to have 90%. And 2 years later, you're going to have even lower percentage. And 3 years, an even lower percentage. And maybe some of those kids will maintain vaccine-induced titer levels over a period of years, but each year that passes, you've got fewer and fewer. So you're never going to have the kind of antibody rates necessary to create herd immunity in the population, even if you vaccinated 100% of people. It's medically impossible. So it's discriminatory to make the kids with religious exemptions stay home, because they may or may not be lacking immunity in the first place. But even if they are, there are at least five times as many, in fact, frankly, much more than that, given what I just explained. But even if everybody was just vaccinated 6 months ago, five times as many of the vaccinated kids who are not immune, who are not being required to stay home. Makes no sense medically, no sense legally. You're listening to Vaccines in Your Rights in the U.S. I'm vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, speaking to you from the Vaccine Rights Studios in beautiful Asheville, North Carolina. We are going to go to a short break here, but we will be back shortly. I hope you'll stay with us here on Freedomizer Radio and Homeopathy World Community Radio. And let me give out the call-in number if you've got a question. Don't be shy. Pick up that phone. Area code 347-324-3704. That's area code 347-324-3704. And that number is at the top of the Freedomizer Radio website at Freedomizer, freedom with I-Z-E-R, freedomizerradio.com. It's got two R's together there from freedomizerradio.com. We'll be back in just a little bit, folks. Stay with us.
Did you know most Americans know nothing or very little about the legal system? I am the Rose, Rose Colombo, longtime legal activist, legal coach, legal advocate, and the author of Fight Back Legal Abuse, Irwin Award winner, and also my latest political satire, Obamacare Dinosaurs, Rednecks, and Radicals. A political satire exposing the evil agendas of Obamacare and redistribution of wealth that leaves you with a thought-provoking ending. Will mankind survive, or will the U.S. natural-born citizen become extinct? It's available at Amazon.com. You can also visit my website at www.fightbacklegalabuse.com for more information. So order your copy today and empower yourself with knowledge before injustices come knocking on your back door unexpectedly.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land.
Hi, I have a question for you. Are you sick and tired of being sick and tired? Do you want a company that provides good quality ingredients and does not use artificial sweeteners? Look no further. Genesis Pure has a complete lineup of health and wellness, sports performance, and superfruit juices like noni and mangosteen that are pure, wild harvested with no binders and fillers. The philosophy is simple. Cleanse the body of toxins, balance the body's pH and hormones, and build the body nutritionally. Every race has a starting line, and yours is Cleanse, Balance, Build. Sign up for at least a 25% discount and include auto ship of at least one product to start building up 20% back in points for free products. It's a win-win. Help fund our operation while you fund your body nutritionally. Start your journey at genesispure.com/freedomizerhealth. Again, that is genesispure.com/freedomizerhealth.
Hello again, Freedomist. Proof is here, and I want to talk to you about a brand new soda maker called SodaStream. Now, the Proof House has had SodaStream for about a year, and we love the thing. We use it quite often. With SodaStream, you can have fresh-made soda in seconds. One of the big things we like about it is that there's no high fructose corn syrup and no aspartame. There's over 60 flavors, or you can create your own. Not just sodas, they also have iced teas and energy drinks. Here at the Proof House, we make egg cream sodas all the time. Some other facts to consider here, there's no electricity, no more wasted bottles and cans, and the most important thing is that it tastes great. Keep in mind, too, this is a perfect family present for Christmas, or, hey, just surprise the family with something great. Also, for a limited time, there's free shipping, So go to freedomizerradio.com and look for the SodaStream link, and I hope you check out the product. That's SodaStream right on freedomizerradio.com.
U.S. trade negotiators are pushing to complete the TPP this year. They're trying to keep it under the radar. The best way to stop the TPP is to drag it into the light of day. Right now, negotiators have appointed approximately 600 corporate lobbyists to serve as cleared advisors on the TPP, while refusing to release any of their negotiating proposals for public review. Corporate media is unlikely to inform the public about the TPP. We need to do it ourselves.
We are back. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips. Right before the break, I was talking about a situation where school kids have to stay home. The unvaccinated school kids, kids with exemptions, have to stay home for the incubation period if there's an outbreak. There's one case of chickenpox, someone in the school, then all the unvaccinated kids have to stay home for 21 days. The particular situation here is that somebody messed up and the kid was supposed to have been kept out of school. However nonsensical it is, that is the policy around the country. They kept him out for 13 days before they figured out there was a mistake. Excuse me, they let him stay in for 13 days before they figured out they'd made a mistake and he was supposed to have been kept home. And the person emailing me was asking, hey, they messed up. They let him stay over 13 days. Can they now make him stay home for the remaining 8 days of the total 21-day period? Yeah, I think they got you there. You know, count your blessings. He got away with 13 of those days that he technically could have been kept out. So he stays home for basically a little over a week instead of 3 weeks. I had a North Carolina parent call me once, say the kid had to stay home for 21 days three times in one school year, because some other kid kept getting the chicken pox. And the CDC admits on its website that most outbreaks start in a vaccinated child because vaccines don't work in everybody and because there's so many more non-immune vaccinated kids than non-immune exempt kids or even exempt kids altogether, whether they're immune or not. So interesting situation there. Moving on. This, I got to tell you this one, folks. There were, every once in a while, people send me humorous things concerning vaccines. You got to get your humor where you can because it's such a dark issue in so many ways. Here's a picture of a large glass window, the front for a medical, probably a private medical practice. Language on the window says internal medicine and some other things that you can't see because there's a couple of large pieces of paper or poster taped to the window covering up the name, but you can see it's a medical office. Two posters or notices. One looks like it's maybe just a 8x11 piece of paper with very large type on it. The other one may be a piece of poster board because it's larger. But anyway, the first one says, attention patients, we now have the flu vaccine. The larger one right next to it says, now the first one is obviously run through a printer, very large professional type, all capital letters. Attention patients, we now have the flu vaccine. The poster is a handwritten message, and it says, patients, Dr. Patel will not be in the office today or tomorrow. He is very sick with the flu. Sorry for any inconvenience. Call back on Wednesday. Sorry and thank you. That's hilarious. One sign saying we have the flu vaccine, the next one saying the doctor's sick with the flu and will be out. So goes it. Now, I saw something really interesting on the web recently at Fox Nation, and they were taking a poll. It was up for several days. The question is not vaccinating your children irresponsible or a right parents have? So this poll played out over several days, and the numbers moved around somewhat. The three choices were irresponsible, a parent's right, and undecided. So here are the final figures, or the last ones that I saw before. I don't think it's still available here. Is not vaccinating children irresponsible or a parent's right? Irresponsible, 14%. Personally, I was shocked in a very pleasant way at these poll results. Irresponsible, 14%. A parent's right, 85%. 85% of parents right, and then 1% undecided. This is fascinating to me because sometimes, if not usually or always, the way polls are designed is they bias the result just by the way they ask the questions. To say whether or not it's a parent's right doesn't necessarily mean it's irresponsible. I mean, I don't care for the choice. Because when you say irresponsible, that presumes, of course, that it's potentially harmful. So when you say it's a parent's right, I mean, I could imagine people saying, well, I think it's irresponsible, but parents should still have the right, for example. Or I think parents should have the right because it's not irresponsible. Well, that would be what the choice are offering you here. But I don't care for the way this was set up. But even though I think it was set up in a way designed to with a bias in favor of vaccination, it still came out 85% of the people who participated in that poll said that it's a parent's right. Now, this is not a scientific poll. It's whoever goes to the internet page. So there's no way we can say this is representative of the general population. But I had a guest earlier this week on another show I was doing who had poll figures over the last, roughly 12 or so years. I don't remember the exact years. And I don't remember the exact percentages either, so this is going to be a little less than precise, but you'll definitely get the sense. And the question here was, what percentage of parents polled think that vaccines cause autism? And something on the order of 12, 13, 14 years ago, somewhere around the year 2000, the figure was 5%. Somewhere a few years later, maybe it was 2005 or 7, somewhere in midway point, give or take, that figure had gone up considerably. And I don't remember the number, but I think it was maybe 18%, somewhere there. And then the figure very recently was in the 30s, I think 33%, but some roughly was a third. That number has increased profoundly from 5 to 33. I mean, that's almost seven times, between six and seven times higher. It's not like it increased by, you know, 5 or 10%. That's 600 or 700% increase. So that's pretty impressive, and not, it's particularly impressive because of the mainstream unrelenting insistence that vaccines don't cause autism, despite the profound evidence from the medical literature, from the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, the federal program, and just multiple sources of information and pieces of information from very, very credible sources saying that it's pretty clear that vaccines do cause autism. And then you ask any of the parents, of course, who watch it happen in their children's lives, perfectly normal child, meeting all their milestones, perfectly developmentally normal or even advanced, and then they get vaccines and quickly regress, and nothing else happening in their lives that would explain why a normal child becomes autistic. It's pretty obvious to the ones who watch it happen in their own lives, and a little too damn convenient for doctors who didn't see any of that firsthand to say, oh, no, that's not anything to do with vaccines. Well, I'll have to come back and do a show on vaccines and autism because it would take a whole show just to list all the evidence showing the connection. But in any case, we're seeing one poll, however unofficial, suggesting that a majority, a clear majority, if not a vast majority of parents, thinks it should be a parent's right. And you don't necessarily have to be for or against vaccines to think it should be either one or only one of those in order to think that you should have the right. It's dangerous that a dangerous precedent that we are required to do any medical procedure for ourselves or our children in any sort of absolute way to the extent the vaccines are done, because what's next? You know, once you cross that line where the state is going to tell you what you can or can't do with your children, is going to require you to put your child's life at risk, and that's what you do every time you administer a vaccine to a child or adult. Well, let me push on here. The clock is rolling quickly. Here's a really, putting on my sarcastic voice filter now. Here's a really startling and critical study. This is actually a real study. But what is bizarre is that anybody would actually study this and whether or not it matters. But here it is, the results. Proof out now. We have the formal published study. It's now documented that immunizations alter body odor. So I know a lot of you who are listening have been wondering this now for some time. I wonder if immunizations alter body odor. You know, every time my kid gets a vaccine, he smells different. You know, I hear that all the time. Not. I just have to ask, why would anybody be spending time and money answering that question? I mean, maybe they learned something in the process that's useful or helpful, but you just got to ask sometimes. Had some feedback. Now, this is actually, look at the date on this. Well, this is not as far back as I was thinking, just last month. Heard from a gentleman in Massachusetts. The state of Massachusetts, the legislature there was considering legislation that would be mandating vaccines for healthcare professionals. And many institutions, the individual hospitals or systems, the companies do that already all over the country, and more states are considering laws to require it for all the healthcare workers in the state, because not all hospitals are yet doing this on their own. And the word is that the Joint Committee on Public Health in Massachusetts decided against advancing the bill during the current legislative session. They said they felt there are already sufficient opportunities for people, including healthcare workers, to get flu shots voluntarily, but they also heard from workers who had experienced adverse reactions or had other reasons for not wanting to be vaccinated. So the committee's decision not to advance the bill, according to this one source, seems reasonable. I couldn't agree with it more. It is possible to make a difference, folks, and this is a classic example. We talk often here on this show what's wrong and what's going wrong and what could go wrong, and there are some very, very serious things in those categories, but sometimes things go right. So we're going to try to bring you some of that information here as well. Let's see. Somebody had a question. A mother in a district who was also excluded mentioned that a school board member is trying to pass something that would not let a child come to their school district without vaccines. I wasn't sure what the exclusion was referring to, unless it was somebody talking about, is the one where a child was excluded for not being vaccinated. And a school board member wants to, sounds like what they're saying here essentially is eliminate exemptions. And can they do that? You know, isn't that a state law matter? Can a school district do whatever they want to do? And the answer is no, of course they can't. Now, there are certain kinds of decisions that are made at any of a number of different political levels. You know, issues that concern the spread of infectious disease between countries, you know, individual countries can't resolve that. You've got to have somebody or some entity or organization that deals with international law or international relations, and that's what the World Health Organization does. So Vaccine requirements for international travel, for example, are governed by the World Health Organization and its international health regulations. There's certain kinds of decisions that are made by local governments. You know, when individual school districts, now maybe this varies from state to state, but for example, here in North Carolina, individual school districts decide when they start and finish the school year. The state says how many days they have to be in operation, and that's the same all over the state, but the individual districts can start later or earlier, depending on weather or other factors, I guess. But so there's be certain kinds of decisions that can be made at the local level, but a local political jurisdiction, a local school district, a local county or city cannot enact rules or regulations or whatever they call them at the local level that would violate or conflict with a higher political arena. So, you know, a local school district cannot deny the right to exercise a religious exemption, for example, or a medical exemption if that is granted by the state legislature. State legislature is a higher political authority. And it's probably the legislature ultimately that decides what kinds of issues can be decided at the local level, or they will grant that authority to a state department of education who will make those decisions. But ultimately, any decisions that can be made at the local level would have to be made within the authority granted by the higher State Department of Education or the state legislature or something like that. Now, maybe there's a difference, some differences between what private schools and public schools can do. You know, for example, whether or not a religious exemption applies to private schools depends probably on the specific wording and proper interpretation of each state's law. So the answer may vary from state to state. But once the lines are drawn, then local officials can only make decisions within the boundaries that they've been given latitude to make decisions in. So a local school district, let's say the school district with respect to public schools, just to be crystal clear, if you've got a religious exemption in your state, a local school, public school district cannot decide they're not going to accept religious exemptions. It's not within their authority. They're a lower tier or level of political authority than the state legislature that granted the exemption. So it's an interesting question because there are, you know, different levels, local levels, state level, federal or government, or yeah, federal level, and international level. And depending on what the specific issue is, it may fall within the jurisdiction of one or more of any of these different levels. And there are situations where even if it's not within the jurisdiction of a particular level, that level could be invited into the issue to deal with the issue if a level with jurisdiction invited them. So, for example, if there was some outbreak in a in an airport near the U.S.-Mexican border that didn't have anything to do directly and immediately with Mexico, but maybe it was a potential risk for Mexico, then maybe the federal government would invite the World Health Organization in if it didn't already have jurisdiction because of the threat to another country. I know that's maybe not a great example, but the point is that just because you don't initially have jurisdiction, whatever your level is, if you are an official at one of these levels, doesn't mean you can't still be involved, but you maybe have to be invited in by some authority that does already have jurisdiction. So the thing about different layers and levels and jurisdictions is not always crystal clear at the start or the finish. We're down to the last few seconds here. I'm going to go ahead and sign out. Let me see if I can find the song here. Go ahead and play us out here. You've been listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips. We're here every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll hope we'll see you next week, folks. Thanks for listening. Come back and call in any time with your questions or comments.
Across this land, both near and far, throughout the human race, within each beating heart, there is a dream whose time has come for us to claim our birthright, each and every one. Evil hands have intervened, controlling from the shadows, think they can't be seen. But we have eyes, see in the dark, to cast a light upon the madness we embark. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency, for we must be the masters of our destiny. Upon their face, sincerity, while underneath the self-agenda does proceed. But falsity perfumes the air, the sin screams louder than the finest debonair. They'll fill your place with GMOs, and soon your lineage will never cease to grow. Inject your blood with toxic waste. The world is all the fairs if you'll just die in haste. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency, for we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency, for we must be the masters of our destiny. For we must be the masters of our destiny. For we must be the masters.